Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. I'm delighted to have as my special feature guest today, just ending a bang-up lineup this week, beginning with Joaquin Agopian, then Monday, then John Kaminsky, Wednesday, Jack Mullen today. These are truth-tellers in a big way. I want to begin with some stories and draw on Jack's comments from the start. We got, of course, the Israeli defense minister declaring baldly Israel's willingness to violate international law, the Geneva Conventions, human rights willy-nilly, encouraging the mass murder, rape, looting, whatever. We have abolished all the rules of war. Our soldiers will not be held responsible for anything. There will be no military courts. What in God's name does he think will be the consequence of that? Meanwhile, Israel bombs Gaza's Baptist Hospital. Authorities say 300 to 500 dead. An IDF shill took credit for the bombing in a now-deleted post. Here, censored man asking him, why did you delete your initial tweet? You have already confirmed that Netanyahu has put you on an official Israeli task force to control the narrative online. This means you get information before Israeli intelligence, before the media does. This means that your initial tweet was most likely accurate. Here was the initial tweet from Hananya Naftal, breaking. You Israeli Air Force struck a Hamas terrorist base inside a hospital in Gaza. A multiple number of terrorists are dead. It's heartbreaking that Hamas is launching rockets from hospital mosques, schools, and using civilians as human shields, which, of course, is to justify the IDF bombing hospitals, mosques, schools, and civilians. Just completely outrageous. We actually have the video where sound analysis shows that Israel used a powerful JDAM missile. Here it is. You listen carefully, you'll hear initially the sound of a Hamas rocket. They're very feeble. They have practically no explosive impact. They do very little damage. Then hear the massive sound of the JDAM. Here it comes.
Bombs out. Bombs away.
The sound is the same as the J-Dam. It cannot be Hamas. This also means it was targeted. 100% right. 100% right. Meanwhile, Chris Hedges just gives us a completely sensational report about Israel's culture of deceit. I read parts of this. I shared virtually the whole of it yesterday on my show on Republic Broadcasting Network. Israel, which always seeks to blame Palestinians for the atrocities it carries out, is the least trustworthy source about the bombing of the hospital in Gaza. Israel was founded on lies. The lie that Palestinian land was largely unoccupied. The lie that 750,000 Palestinians fled their homes and villages during their ethnic cleansing by Zionist militias in 1948 because they were told to do so by Arab leaders. The lie that it was the Arabic armies that started the 1948 war that saw Israel seize 78% of historic Palestine. The lie that Israel faced annihilation in 1967, forcing it to invade and occupy the remaining 22% of Palestine, as well as land belonging to Egypt and Syria. Israel is sustained by lies. The lie that Israel wants a just and equitable peace and will support a Palestinian state. The lie that Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. The lie that Israel is an outpost of Western civilization in a sea of barbarism. The lie that Israel respects the rule of law and human rights. Israel's atrocities against the Palestinians are always greeted with lies. I heard them, I recorded them, I published them in my stories for the New York Times when I was the paper's Middle East bureau chief. I covered war for 2 decades, including 7 years in the Middle East. I learned quite a bit about the size and lethality of explosive devices. There is nothing in the arsenal of Hamas or Palestinian Islamic Jihad that could have replicated the massive explosive power of the missile that killed an estimated 500 civilians in the Al-Arab Christian Hospital in Gaza. Nothing. If Hamas or Palestinian Islamic Jihad have these kinds of missiles, huge buildings in Israel would be rubble with hundreds of dead. They don't. Meanwhile, the media claims that Gaza got the hospital story wrong yet to apologize. This is proving to be a litmus test. If they're coming out and saying that Israel didn't do it and the media won't explain, you know they are shills for Israel, which dominates our media. This is from Newsmax, and I'm just embarrassed that Newsmax is publishing propaganda of this character. Many mainstream media organizations that initially reported Israel was responsible for an explosion Tuesday at the Al-Arab Hospital in Gaza City have yet to apologize or publish corrections after it's been determined that a misfired rocket launched by the Palestinian Islamic Jihad and intended for Israel was a culprit. Not. Israel initially denied involvement, no surprise there, and later Tuesday uncovered evidence showing the rocket had come from the Islamic Jihad, which backs the Hamas terrorists who govern the Gaza Strip. U.S. intel confirmed Israel's fine. Of course we do. And more evidence showed the rocket struck a hospital parking lot, not the hospital directly. They do have photographs of parts of a rocket sitting in a parking lot, but it's done no damage. I mean, this is just ridiculous. The headlines online were quick to blame Israel, immediately trusting information provided by the Hamas-run Gaza Ministry of Health. Here's CNN. Hundreds killed in Israeli strike on hospital, Palestinian officials say. Reuters. Hundreds killed in Israeli strike on hospital, health authority. Wall Street Journal. Israeli airstrike on Gaza hospital killed more than 500 Palestinian officials, say. The New York Times. Israeli strike kills 100 in hospital, Palestinians say. Well, what they were saying was accurate and true. Indeed, Chris Hedges continues. The brazenness of Israeli lies stunned those of us who reported from Gaza. It did not matter if we'd seen the Israeli attack, including the shooting of unarmed Palestinians. It did not matter how many witnesses we interviewed. It did not matter what photographic and forensic evidence we'd obtained. Israel lied. Small lies, big lies, huge lies. These lies came reflexively and instantly from the Israeli military, Israeli politicians, and Israeli media. They were amplified by Israel's well-oiled propaganda machine and repeated with a cloying sincerity on international news outlets. Israel engages in the kinds of jaw-dropping lies that characterize despotic regimes. It does not deform the truth. It invents it. It paints a picture that is diametrically opposed to reality. Those of us who have covered the occupied territories have run into Israel's Alice in Wonderland narratives, which we dutifully insert into our story, required under the rules of American journalism, although we know they are untrue. Israel has invented an Orwellian lexicon. Children killed by Israeli become children caught in crossfire. The bombing of residential district with dozens of dead and wounded becomes a surgical strike on a bomb-making factory. The destruction of Palestinian homes becomes a demolition of homes of terrorists. The big lie feeds the two reactions Israel seeks to elicit: racism among its supporters and terror among its victims. The big lie fosters the myth of a clash of civilizations, a war between democracy, decency, and honor on one hand, and Islamic terrorism, barbarism, and medievalism on the other. Jack, this is such an astonishing story, and Chris Hedges did such a brilliant job of this. How amazing to hear a mainstream journalist speak the truth. Your thoughts?
Let's just be sure that the audio is getting you the way you want me to get the audio.
I think we're good. We're good, Jack. Go ahead. I'll check with Mitchell.
Okay. Once in a while, to be relevant, you have to tell the truth, right? I mean, there's a point where nobody bothers to believe anybody any further if every single word they utter turns out to be pure nonsense. But, you know, according to the way the Talmud and the Torah were created, deception is the primary tool of this political system that we now refer to as Zionism. But originally it was Judaism that was designed specifically for purposes of undermining humanity, very slow baby steps, century after century, and creating what we have today, which is what I believe is their end game. The Mossad motto being, by deception thou shalt do war. We find people like Ben Gurion speaking back in 1948. This was something that Yitzhak Rabin leaked from his memoirs in 1979. Rabin said, "We walked outside, Ben Gurion accompanied us, and the individual with us, his name was Alon, repeated his question, 'What is to be done with the Palestinian population?' And Ben Gurion waved his hand in a gesture which said, 'Drive them out.'" And of course, that's been the primary goal of every subsequent Israeli leader since 1948, when Israel was bombed into existence. And so I think that this is just more of the same, but I believe that it's beginning to get tiresome even to the people in the Middle East and the Israelis. And it is now time to move it into high gear, finalizing the end of the United States through economic destruction, and then subsequently attack through ground troops that are now entering the borders, specifically the Texas border and the New Mexico border, et cetera, in California. And so we see that this is just an age-old plan that is as easily seen today as it was in the days of people like the 1850s type of people, like Albert Pike, for example, who predicted this, and Henry Ford in 1921, who wrote extensively in his newspaper about what was the plan and how this was going to take effect in the near future, and he was right. And so these people now have reached the point where it's time to bring the United States to the ground. We know that Benjamin Netanyahu called the United States the golden calf, and that he said that we would use them and suck them dry. We will destroy them slowly and make them suffer for refusing to be our slaves. That's the reason for the lying. That's the reason for the arrogance. That's the reason that they don't care about rules. I was listening to Netanyahu on a video a few days ago. I'm not certain the venue he was speaking in front of, but one of the things he said was that if the United States didn't quickly begin to help Israel in this battle of life and death against the Hamas, that there would be consequences for them, too. Now, this is the sort of subtle threat that people like Netanyahu are famous for, because we all know that Netanyahu has the capability of doing things like bringing down the World Trade Center, as they did in 2001. So, Jim, that's the story. This is a complete narrative built on lies, and it's beyond my ability to comment anymore. I mean, this may be the last show I ever do. I'm literally sick of it being so obvious that and none of the Americans can figure it out. I mean, we hear claims of babies being killed, and then they prove that to be false. But the damage was already done. Someone heard the words, babies were killed. And we hear that people like Ben Shapiro going on rants and raves and pure anti-American, speaking to Americans who love him to death, complaining about a photo of a baby shown burned up, and later it was found to be the result of artificial intelligence. Shapiro, who ranted about it on Twitter, which is what I'm going to call it, then deleted his tweet. So, you know, the fans already knew what he said, and if you're not aware of the fact he deleted that tweet, you're never going to know it existed anyway. You'll just hear the rumors. And so what I'm saying is that we are being lied into a war. We're being sold another war the same way they sold World War One, the same way they sold World War Two. All information from the same information machine. All of it absolute BS, and Americans still buying it as their entire economy is being destroyed to fund the Ukraine and to fund activities in Israel. And there's nothing we can do about that now. I don't see any way. We talk about it, Jim. It's pretty frustrating. They're talking about another $100 billion bill while we at the same time cannot fund our own government. Shutdown after shutdown, debt skyrocketing. No nation in the history of the world has ever had as much debt as the United States. The physical dollar crumbling in real time, its purchasing power dropping, the GDP going down in milliseconds. And we see nothing in the mainstream media at all about, let's worry a little bit about the United States. We can't afford another war. It's not going to be done. We see the Senate just voted, to support Israel in a non-binding agreement that was signed 97-0. I mean, what are we talking about here? There's not one single person in the Senate that can see what's happening here, or are they all paid off handsomely, or are they all compromised? This is the story for a future generation to find out. But for right now, we know that the United States is not going to abandon their greatest ally in their next 9/11, and that American blood will be spilled soon as troops rush now towards the border, as ships steam towards the borders, and as airplanes are being prepared to be delivered, tanks and other weapons, munitions we don't have. And I don't know, Jim. All I can say is that this is a time of deception. This is our challenge as a human being. This is what we were put here to discern. Can we understand deception, and can we live past it and make it out of this realm that we live in, knowing that we figured it out, or are we going to suffer it generation after generation forever in a loop that never ends? I don't know.
Well, just to extract a couple key points from your observation, Jack. Number one, Israel is absolutely determined and ruthless to remove all Palestinians from Palestine. I mean, the Israelis have been there for 75 years, and Palestinian for thousands of years. This is their land. They are actually genetic descendants of the tribe of Judah and other original Hebrew tribes, whereas the present residents of Israel are not. They're Khazarians, or descendants of the region known as Khazaria, much of which constitutes modern-day Ukraine. I'm thus convinced that it's Russia defeating the Ukrainian army, the inability to make Ukraine the new Israel, that has motivated this effort to complete the ethnic cleansing at which the Israelis have been so successful in the past. But the brutality is just stunning. In addition, all the troops coming across our border, you're absolutely right. This is a modern-day Trojan horse, and it's doing right there in the public, right there, obvious. And because the Biden admin is behind it, they're not offering a peep of complaint about it. Instead, they're fostering where it happening, where DHS has a base camp in Panama, where they're colluding with the UN to bring massive numbers of migrants into the United States. What in the hell are we to do with them? We have a Biden administration headed by the howdy doody of our time, who's a puppet of Bibi Netanyahu, mark my words, saying we're going to defend the borders of Ukraine. We're going to defend the borders of Israel, but not a damn thing being done about the borders of the United States. In Jack, the developments are continuing. We now have an Israeli airstrike hitting an ancient Greek Orthodox church, killing Christians. Ancient St. Porphyrius Orthodox Church in Gaza was damaged in a deadly Israeli airstrike that struck an adjacent building, destroying the church's assembly hall, killed Christians and Palestinian refugees who had taken shelter in the church's compound. This is a church. It's not a legitimate target. Here's Jihad Abusalism tweeting. The ancient St. Porphyrius Orthodox Church in Gaza, a significant historical site dating back to 450 AD, has reportedly been struck by Israeli airstrikes. The church bears the name of St. Porphyrius, the church bishop renowned for introducing Christianity to Gaza during his tenure. Here's another. The reports are now confirmed by Dr. Murti Habib, the pastor of the Evangelical Lutheran Christian Church in Bethlehem. Breaking news. Israel bombed a house bordering on the Greek Orthodox Church in Gaza, which brought down the assembly hall where around 50 Christians were having refuge. At least a child was murdered, others injured, all Christians, many still under the rubble. Here's an image from the assembly hall of the massacre. Lord have mercy. We have some video. Listen. What a mess.
Breaking news, Israel has just bombed one of the oldest churches in the world.
So, Jack, how are they going to spin this one? Just some mistake, Jack. They're not going to take responsibility. They take responsibility for nothing. They lie about everything. Chris Hedges so nailed it. Your thoughts?
Given that, isolated by itself, they're the only nation on earth that seems to respect the its own ideology, no matter how evil it is, and act on its own principles, no matter how evil they are. The United States can't acknowledge any principles whatsoever. It can't protect its own people from any single infringement against its own constitution. It even refuses its own people the right to protect themselves while the world is becoming increasingly more hostile and a more dangerous place to live. They're busy continually around the clock trying to disarm Americans. So in that sense, Israel does what it claims to do, which is support this principle of total annihilation of the rest of the world, the so-called Goyim. And, you know, they don't care about an ancient church. That's not their synagogue. That is not a place of worship of their God. Yahweh doesn't live in a church. It's a church of idol worshipers. And as we found out last week when the rabbi told the individual was interviewing him that we should not be just worshiping a single Jew, Jesus, we should be worshiping each and every one as they're all dying for our sins. So they believe at this moment they're out there dying for our sins. So it makes complete sense to me. Their rhetoric, if people can't recognize this is what they're going to hear, if they can't realize that's what they're going to deal with, they don't go there with the recognition that you can't stop them by using words or and making them feel guilty or intimidating them when they're actually exterminating a group of people that are referred to as animals in their own literature. There's nothing we could do about that. We've known since I was young that they plan to get rid of every single person in Palestine that wasn't a, quote, Jew. And that includes even their own who are African in nature, as they recently have asked a large block of Africans to get out, even though they're Jewish and have lived there for generations, but they're not suitable because of their race. So we have an apartheid state with an extremely vicious policy of preserving its own borders and its own what they believe is their ethnic genetic makeup, which I don't have any idea how they can determine any of that. As you've already noted, they're imposters, but they're planning to hold that space anyway on the idea that they belong there. There's nothing we can do with these people directly or through talk or hope or prayer or any other thing. If prayer would have worked, we'd have the greatest world in human history. People are told to pray every single day by all the religions. None of that brings any peace, changes any of this whatsoever. What it does do is disarm them, take them off the streets, remove them from the political discussion, and give them false hope that all they do is bury their head in the sand, pray a little, and when they wake up, it's all going to be over. And in fact, that's probably going to be the truth, because we see the United States is being attacked from the inside, the outside, through economic collapse, through food supply chain destruction, you name it. And vaccinations from a medical mafia that has, with impunity, been able to inject and kill thousands, if not tens of thousands of Americans, and tens of thousands of babies have been damaged through autism and every other conceivable birth defect that we never saw before, with a rising population of children that can't even stand still for a couple of minutes. This whole world is collapsing in real time. We're watching the end game unfold, Jim.
Jack, we'll be right back with Jack Bowman after this break.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Jack, I recently published a review of 8 different theories of the nature of morality on UNZ.com, UNZ Review, and explained that the most pernicious of them all is called limited utilitarianism, where a group actions and determines what's right based on the maximal consequences for the members of the group, regardless of the consequences for others, which differentiates it from classic utilitarianism, which declares you have to consider the consequences for everyone. On classic utilitarianism, you'd have to consider the consequences for the Gazans, for example, of being slaughtered in place, which are obviously vastly negative. So you would calculate net happiness equal gross happiness minus gross unhappiness, and you'd have a tough time justifying an action like the Israelis are taking on the basis of classic utilitarianism. But with regard to limited, the consequences for others just do not matter. You only calculate the consequences for you, in this case for the Israelis, for the Jews, and because they believe they have a theological mandate that they are the chosen people, God has selected them, that the other races only exert to serve the Jews, that they're entitled to all the property, all the wealth, all the possessions of the world is theirs, according to their interpretation of their theological tradition, the situation could not be worse. They're going to continue to act with impunity. The onslaught is going to continue. Even the UN, Jack, is declaring there's a genocide in Gaza as Israel plans its ground invasion. In America, you can lose the ability to work for the rest of your life if you're against the hospital bombing Jews. However, the UN is saying it's a genocide in Gaza. Weird dynamics going on here. Basically, the world can't deny what's going on in Gaza, but the Americans can. Because the Americans can do and say whatever they want. They're Jewish. RT published. Israel is engaged in a systematic campaign of crimes against humanity, against Palestinians in Gaza. United Nations human rights expert warned in a statement published Thursday, citing Tuesday's deadly airstrikes that targeted a hospital and several refugee shelters as evidence. Israeli officials were seeking to wipe out the entire Palestinian population. Well, yeah, that's what it looks like they're doing. Considering statements made by Israeli political leaders and their allies, accompanied by military action in Gaza and escalation of arrests and killing in the West Bank, too, there's also a risk of genocide against the Palestinian people. The experts, members of the UN Human Rights Council Independent Special Procedure Body, explain Israel has violated international humanitarian and criminal law in cutting off drinking water, medicine, and food to Gaza. They continued, pointing out the UN Security Council has repeatedly condemned the starvation of civilians as a method of warfare. Meanwhile, they said, the ongoing and calculated destruction of civilian homes and infrastructures constitute domicide. That's already a violation of the Hague Convention against the destruction of personal property, the Geneva Convention and international law regarding collective punishment, that you cannot publish people for crimes they did not personally commit. But yet it goes on unabated. Here's a photograph showing just how massive it is. The group specifically referenced Tuesday's airstrike on the All-Arab Hospital, which killed over 470 civilians. I dare say the total is going to be closer to 1,000 and left hundreds more trapped under the rubble as an atrocity, as well as a strike that same day on a school run by the UN Palestinian Refugee Agency inside the al-Baghazi refugee camp that killed at least 6 and injured dozens more. Israel was fully aware of the civilian nature of both facilities, having twice threatened the hospital with attack if those inside were not evacuated, and received coordinates of the school from the UN Refugee Committee daily. The Israeli Defense Force have denied responsibility for the hospital strike, claiming it has proof it was the result of a failed rocket launch by Islamic Jihad. Jews also claim to have proof of Hitler's roller coasters of death and the Wall of Eyes. Jewish proof is a very delicate matter. Meanwhile, this seems to have deep roots. Holocaust makes Israelis think international law does not apply to them. On a national level, Golda Meir said, after the Holocaust, Jews have the right to do anything they want. The Holocaust makes Israelis think international law doesn't apply to them because they are the ultimate victories of history, the only victims. More. In 2009, Aloni, who's making this point, published an op-ed in Hebrew in Haaretz, opening with the quote from Meir. Meir said after the Eichmann trial, "Now, when everyone knows what they did to us, we can do anything we want, and no one has the right to criticize us and tell us what to do," translated from the original Hebrew. Levy again, let's remember, this is a quote he used when speaking to Laura Marlowe on the Irish Times. Meir said, "After what the Nazis did to us, we can do whatever we want." Note, in the original 2002 telling, the emphasis is on the Eichmann trial and not, as Levy presents it, the Holocaust. Additionally, it is Begin, not Meir, who's attributed as saying, "No one has the right to tell us what to do." Also, Begin was likely referring to how the Allies attacked the German cities of Dresden during World War II, not referencing the Holocaust. Believe me, he was referencing the Holocaust. And we know, Jack, the whole Holocaust story is nonsense. Here's a photograph of Auschwitz. Let me just lend a few points here as we continue our review of the matter. To the extent which the number of Jews who died in the camps can be objectively determined, the most reliable numbers appear to come from the records of the International Committee of the Red Cross, which visited the camps and kept meticulous records of the identities of those who died and their cause of death. Not one is reported to have been put to death in gas chambers, and the total it reported in 1993 for all of the camps combined was 296,081. Even rounding up to an even 600,000 gypsies, Jews, and the mentally and physically infirm. The empirical evidence thus contradicts the contention that 6 million Jews were put to death and thereby falsifies the hypothesis. Counting deaths attributed to the Holocaust, apart from the records of the International Committee of the Red Cross, turns out to be an exercise in fuzzy math because none of them add up. As Robert Forreston observed during an interview on 13 December 2006, the Vad Vashem database was built up by simple unverified declarations emanating from unverified sources processed in such a way the same person could be recorded as having died several times, even it seems as many as 10. And even the most complete archives are not collated to make total numbers accessible, but only individual cases, which appears an obvious measure to preserve the untestability of the hypothesis that 6 million Jews had perished. If you just look at the floor plan for Auschwitz, it's remarkable. There was a hospital with a surgical unit, an obstetrical and gynecological block, quarantine area for newly arriving prisoners. There were a workshop for woodworking and sewing, a brothel, an art museum, a library, a booker shop, a post office, a theater for music and drama, a swimming pool. Here you have photographs from Nick Kohlerstrom's brilliant book, Breaking the Spell. Children being liberated from Buchenwald. Hundreds, even thousands of children were born in these camps. How is that consistent with them being extermination centers where the inmates were offloaded from the boxcars, stripped of their clothing, packed into gas chambers, and killed? It's absurd. Look at the healthy-looking kids at Birkenau being liberated by the Red Army. Did you know? Didn't you know? There was a British football team at Auschwitz. This is my favorite photograph. I even put it on the back of my book. And I suppose we didn't go to the moon either. But Israel has officially asked Amazon to stop selling literature on the site that denies the genocide of 6 million Jews during World War II and otherwise promotes anti-Semitism. Notice, there's no question here about truth or falsity, even though it is true that 6 million Jews were not put to death, even though it is true that these were labor camps, they were not extermination centers. You're still promoting anti-Semitism if you publish the truth. Vlad Basham, director in libraries, said he has dispatched a letter to Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos, offering his assistant to curb the spread of hatred. His name, Robert Rosette, said Sunday that Yasham had approached Amazon before on this subject, but the internet retailing giant insisted it would not halt sales of offensive and inciting material, citing freedom of information. Rosette said, given the recent spike in anti-Semitic incidents in the U.S., where I would add, those are arranged by the ADL. They manufacture these events to promote their political agenda, just as Obama did by all the fake shootings at schools. Incidents in the U.S., particularly a vandalism attack on a Jewish cemetery near St. Louis, Amazon would reconsider its position. Well, indeed it did. It banned hundreds, even thousands of books. Thus, as Voltaire observed, to learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize. Jack, your thoughts.
Well, you summarized that pretty well. But I would want to say that, people like Victor Thorne, who departed very young after making observations and writing extensively about the Holocaust, that there probably weren't anywhere near 6 million Jews, even in Europe, and certainly within Hitler's sphere. I mean, he wasn't the owner and controller of all properties in Europe. In fact, a large body of Jews live comfortably in Russia and continue to do so until today. So we know that he didn't have access to every single one, but the population of Jews entirely in the world was in the 15 millions. So there's another stumbling point that seems to get in the way of that argument. All your other points, however, being better. Laurent Guyonnat's wonderful book called Our God is Your God, But He Chose Us is a fantastic resource for people that are trying to understand what happened here and how this individual, not named Yahweh, became part of our system of religion. When we realized that Yahweh didn't show up in any sort of human history prior to 2,000 to 2,500 years ago. Before that, there was no such thing as Islam or Christianity or Judaism, and for that matter, the God of Israel. The God of Israel was a local God, somebody who was favorable to the tribe of Judah. And when the tribe of Judah got booted out, they took him with them. Unfortunately, at that time, he was the God of the tribe of Judah, but over the course of years, he got promoted through their own aggrandizing and literature into the God of the world. And suddenly, then the God of Israel or the God of Judah became the God of everyone. But unfortunately for the everyone's, he only chose the tribe of Judah. Therefore, the rest of us are going to either have to live as slaves, become part of something called the Noahide laws and agree to worship in the way in which Jewish people expect us to worship as non-Jews, and live in a way that we can only describe as indentured servitude or slavery at the worst case. According to Laurent, the Hebrew Tanakh is not just the inspiration of Zionism. It's a single root connecting all expressions of Jewishness. Its core ideology is encapsulated in Yahweh, the national God of the Israelites, who by the Mosaic covenant promised the people domination of the nations of the condition of separateness, on the condition of separateness, meaning they had to stay and remain separate. It was not before the Babylonian exile that Yahweh was promoted as the supreme God of all humankind, who happened to have chosen just one nation. And so Christianity and Islam's submission is to a preposterous claim that they are the servants of the one God, Yahweh, but not necessarily equal to Jews. So it's a situation that for people to continue to support this idea and to downgrade themselves as Christians who are now called Christian Zionists are going to be required to do in order to continue to live in this world, it's going to be a very sad day when they come to realize that they don't get a seat at the table, even though by all means the media would say that that's not true, et cetera, et cetera. We know that that's the case, Jim. We know they're not going to get a seat at the table. We know this war right now is the beginning of that idea. It has been going on since the 1850s in a hot war in the United States. It has led to the death of multiple American presidents. It's the cause of the creation of the Federal Reserve System. It's the primary reason behind World War I immediately after the bankers got control of the United States system of credit. And it's the definite cause for World War II. It is the absolute cause by which we were in war in Vietnam and in Iran in the early 90s, I'm sorry, Iraq, and then the further Middle East wars through George W. Bush. All of this is promoting the same cause. It's weakening America, using American resources, using America's blood and intellect and stolen military technology and other scientific technology to fight their wars around the world because they're too small, too unprepared, and not willing, since, after all, God chose them. We will do their bidding, and we will do their battling until either we wake up and say, no, 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 we're done with this, or we're all essentially enslaved or dead. And that's the only outcome that can be seen from what we're witnessing today, Jim.
Oh, Jack, I think you got it exactly right. Now, Newsmax is hardly alone. I mentioned before having a panel of 100 executives from CNN, all of whom are dual U.S.-Israeli citizens. Here it is. I have another panel from NBC, 100 executives, all of whom are dual U.S.-Israeli citizens. Here it is. Another panel from the New York Times, 100 executives, all of whom are dual U.S.-Israeli citizens. Here it is. Our media is completely dominated. We even have a former Israeli politician who talks about whenever there is criticism of Israel in Europe, they call it out as Holocaust denial. In America, it's anti-Semitism. This was on with Amy Goodman. She's a former minister of education for Israel. Listen to this.
Yours is a voice of criticism we don't often hear in the United States. Often when there is dissent expressed in the United States against policies of the Israeli government, people here are called anti-Semitic. What is your response to that as an Israeli Jew?
Well, it's a trick. We always use it. When from Europe somebody is criticizing Israel, then we bring up the Holocaust. When in this country people are criticizing Israel, then they are anti-Semitic. And the organization is strong and has a lot of money. And the ties between Israel and the American Jewish establishment are very strong. And they are strong in this country. As you know, they have power, which it's okay. They are talented people and they have power, money and media and other things. And their attitude is Israel, my country, right or wrong, the identification. and they are not ready to hear criticism. And it's very easy to blame people who criticize certain acts of the Israeli government as anti-Semitic and to bring up the Holocaust and the suffering of the Jewish people. And that justifies everything we do to the Palestinians.
She herself founded the Israeli left-wing party RATS. In 1992, RATS merged with two other socialist parties to form RATS, of which she became the leader. She's a member of the Socialist International. But Jack, she's a true teller. And don't forget the USS Liberty, 9 June 1967, after it was attacked. Lyndon Johnson had brought it off the coast of Egypt. I believe he was complicit in the attack. He wanted the Israelis to sink it, which would be blamed on the Egyptians. And then he could enter America on the side of Israel. Moshe Dayan was such a great general, he did not need any U.S. assistance. But the pilots attacking the ship wired back that it was an American ship flying an American plane, and their controllers told them to attack anyway, saying like 35 dead and 175 wounded. And, of course, on 9/11, we had over 200 Israeli operatives in New York City under the guise of being art students. They were saying out to bomb the Brooklyn Bridge, blow up the Holland Tunnel, the Lincoln Tunnel. The whole idea was to isolate Manhattan as an island. Five of them were observed in Liberty State Park, where they were filming the destruction of the Twin Towers and celebrating, high fives, taking selfies. They were arrested and incarcerated for 44 days until Michael Chertoff, an assistant attorney general who was also a U.S. Israeli citizen, released them. They returned to Israel. Three of them went on Israeli television and explained they were there to document the destruction of the World Trade Center, which implied foreknowledge. Wesley Clark, at the Commonwealth Club in California on October 3rd, 2007, explained that the U.S. policy thereafter became to attack seven countries in the next 5 years, beginning with Afghanistan and Iraq, ending with Syria and Iran. It didn't work out quite that way due to the intervention of Russia and Iran on behalf of Syria, but it was not for lack of trying. This was the purpose of 9/11, to justify the U.S. entering the war in the Middle East to take out the modern Arab countries that stood as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region, and eventually to confront the Persian nation of Iran. And, of course, I published about it. I continue my collaborative research, bringing together the best experts. Check out America Nuked on 9/11, compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the DOD, and the Mossad. One of the books of mine, Amazon has not banned, remarkably enough. Jack, your thoughts, all of the above.
All right, Mike, Peter, again, this is just interesting that you bring up Wesley Clark, you know, his prediction of seven nations. In one of the most pernicious and evil sections of the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 7, when the Lord, your God, brings you into the land you are entering to possess, and he drives out many nations before you, the Hittites, the Gershites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hittites, and Jebusites, and I apologize for messing up those names, seven nations more numerous and powerful than you. And when the Lord your God delivers them over to you and you defeat them, you must completely destroy them, make no treaty with them, and show them no mercy. Do not intermarry with them. Do not give your daughters to their sons or take their daughters for your sons, because they will turn your sons away from me to worship other gods. Then the Lord's anger will burst again, and he will swiftly destroy you. Instead, this is what you are to do to them. Tear down their altars, smash their pillars, cut down their Asherim poles, burn up their carved images. For you are holy people belonging to your Lord, the God. The Lord your God has chosen that the use of seven nations in that particular phrase by Wesley Clark, who himself was Jewish, was not directly related to that quote out of Deuteronomy. And so, you know, if you don't understand in this world today that you're living in a series of recreations of biblical stories, and their stories. They're not something that was delivered to us through godly means, and that these stories and prophecies are being deliberately fulfilled in order to keep the American and the rest of thinking Western people, and the world for that matter, all nations deserve to be worried about this, in a state of perpetual fear as they believe these incidences are being miraculously filled, these prophecies, etc., not knowing that behind the scenes there is a massive wealth-stealing monstrosity that makes these things happen. Now, we know that 9/11 started out with a false flag event, and it started out with a stand-down. The event...
Jack, yes, it did, as did the Hamas thing stood with a stand-down, too. Go ahead, Jack. It was a glitch. Go ahead. Started with a stand-down.
So we know that the war, I'm sorry, 9/11 started with a stand down. We know that whether we were actually attacked by airplanes has now been shown to be false. However, it was a stand down in the sense that nobody reacted to this situation for quite some time. It's the same thing has happened today in Israel. We know that for 7 hours, there was nothing done whatsoever. It was as though the gates to Israel were left wide open. And I have a video from an individual who lives in Israel who has friends on the inside who made a statement, I think somewhere around the 8th or 9th of October, that it was ridiculous on so many fronts that Israel could be attacked by Gaza. It's nearly impossible. And in my opinion, that it happened that way for 7 hours. And then he says, 7 hours. And I've heard this from sources at Gaza. The Israeli army did absolutely nothing whatsoever, whatever, for the Arabs, the Hamas called the terrorists.
We'll be right back, Jack, after this break. Yes, and Bibi directed a stand down. We'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer with Jack Mullen for the second hour of The Raw Deal here. Jack, you're 100% correct. The Air Force, the planes were sent on wild goose chases to get them away from the purported flight paths of the 9/11 aircraft. The crash sites for which were all fabricated or faked, albeit in different ways. Flight 11, North Tower, wasn't even in the air, nor was Flight 77, Pentagon. They did fly another plane toward the Pentagon on a different trajectory, which then swooped over the building as an explosion occurred. With regard to Flight 93, pilots for 9/11 Truth tracked it and found it was over Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, after it had allegedly crashed in Shanksville. And Flight 175, Wonder of Wonders, was over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, after it officially hit the South Tower, where I obtained FAA registration records showing that the physical aircraft for those two flights was the same plane. Of course, one day could be used Tampa to Chicago, the next New York to San Francisco, were not even formally deregistered or taken out of service until 28 September 2005. So how can planes that weren't even in the air have crashed on 9/11? And how can planes that crashed on 9/11 have still been in the air 4 years later? We now have multiple sources that Bibi Netanyahu ordered the IDF not to respond for 7 hours so he could create the impression of this very successful attack by Hamas, where Russian analysts reported how they'd acquired more territory in a single day and the Ukrainian army had managed in 4 months of its ill-fated counteroffensive, where some 90,000 additional Ukrainian troops were ground up by the Russian military. And, of course, they have lost their Ukrainian option. And I reiterate, I believe that's why they're seeking to get rid of all the remaining Palestinians today. Your thoughts, Jack?
Well, there's no question that's what's going on. And I was reading from this individual. His name was Robbie Farber, who's a investment analyst for Arcania Economics, and a young individual who is, I would say, quite truthful in his observations and what he expected to see from Israel, and it didn't happen. He said that you can't get a bird take a crap on the fence without some sort of alarm or response from their systems. And he said these men just walked in with guns, and they rode golf carts, and they were paragliding above the fence, and they were carrying weapons, and they were shooting people and burning buildings and kidnapping women. And there have been children that were kidnapped. 150 of them just walked to cross the strip. They had 7 hours to do this with no opposition whatsoever. He said a single helicopter gunship could have taken them all out as they crossed into Israel, and nothing happened. So we have to conclude that, you know, the people that came there were told that this would be the opportunity to come here, get set, get dressed up in your outfits. Whether there were actual deaths involved with this, we can never know, because we know, Jim, that in many other events very similar, these events are staged. There's a lot of evidence about that, and but we can never know the truth there. Regardless, 7 hours to allow this to continue before anything was done about it at all is purely indication of a false flag that the people that were at the door were notified in advance. Everybody showed up on time. They got the 7 hours in. This individual, Mr. Barber, said that Israel could easily destroy all of Gaza in 10 minutes. And so whatever was happening here, he felt was not there in order to create the situation that they needed to destroy Gaza. But I think from what we both know, Jim, that they need some sort of reason to destroy Gaza. It looks pretty bad if you just go in and destroy them in 10 minutes. So anyway, that's proof right there that this was a false flag event, same way 9/11 started, the same way the next event will start in the United States, and that's probably something very soon, as we note that these events are happening at the same time the U.S. economy is failing, and there's all sorts of indicators that are signaling that the U.S. is in trouble. The biggest problem for Americans is the debt market. That's the place in which people buy bonds, and they give the U.S. government money, and that money they can hold and do with whatever they want, which is taken out of the hands of the individuals who can't spend it. But all of a sudden, people are selling their bonds, and they're selling them like crazy. As bonds begin to sell off, their face value drops, and as a result of that, the interest rate goes up. Interest rates are used to peg all interest rates, so rising interest rates in the 10-year bond, for example, mean rising interest rates for every kind of interest-related product. So we're going to see interest rates continue to rise, which also requires the federal government to, through the banking system, to come up with the funds necessary to hand to the people that are selling their bonds. We find out that situation where interest rates are rising, bond face values are falling, can lead to something called a liquidity crisis, meaning that there has to be more and more money put into the system to counteract things like rising interest rates so that people can make payments. They have to have more and more working capital. This is drying up the supply of capital. And at some point, there's no amount of capital that can be introduced that will fix it. In the meantime, though, more and more reasons to spend money have to come up. And if that fails to happen, then there'll be the next false flag and the next false flag until the U.S. dollar's value crumbles, its purchasing power dies. And we know that that's not the case for our actual economic reality. There's nothing intrinsic about the dollar that is reflective of the resources that we have at our disposal in this country and in places that we control. Those are the same, and they're still in plentiful supply. It's only that the dollar bills that we've been commanded to use are through a means of fiction are decreased in value. And that decrease in value is the same as the opposite side of transferring your money to somebody else, because the more money that comes into a system, people using it to make purchases that they want to make for war goods, for theft in general, steal the value of your dollars so that you have no way to be able to purchase the same amount of goods you could a day earlier or an hour earlier, et cetera. So in that sense, it steals your wealth. And so they're stealing the American wealth. Americans are not able to see that if you price a value of things today in gold and silver, that they're not going up in price. The price of food in gold, for example, has been coming down steadily since 1960. But the price in food right now is rising like crazy. I think it was up 37% year over to year this past quarter that just ended in September. So food prices continue to rise. food supply chains are another story. They cause price rises as well as they destroy food supply chains, making food harder to become available, more people competing for the same food, rising, causing the prices to rise. So these things are true, that you can have an anomaly, like if you shut down the entire food supply, the prices in food in all media will go up, because it'll be necessary to pay more and more for each individual item you plan to buy. But regardless, this is all happening at the same time. We're seeing the ruination of the United States and its attempt to hang on to life by supporting its arch enemy, the ideal deception in the history of the world is to have your most loyal ally, our greatest ally, be your greatest enemy and not know the difference. And this has happened plenty of times in history. We've seen it in Rome. We've seen it everywhere. It plays and plays and plays, and people don't get a history education or don't care at all, or they can't even have intuition, I suppose, to see that none of this makes any sense. So we're lining up behind the wrong group of people to support, and that same group of people are behind the entire destruction of our civilization worldwide. So I don't know, Jim. I've run out of explanations for how to make this clear.
Well, no, Jack, you make it very clear. And of course, Cynthia McKinney revealed the pledge in 2011 on Iranian TV. She explained how new members of Congress were asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of even the interests of the United States, and that virtually every member of Congress signs the pledge. Years ago, Gary King, a colleague, asked me, did I know how many members of the then current Congress had refused to sign the pledge? When I acknowledged I did not, he held up one finger of one hand, one member of the Congress, Jack. So Congress is Israeli-occupied territory. There's no doubt about it, which is why you get an absurd vote. Did you say 97-0, a non-binding vote to support Israel? Now, bear in mind, Howdy Doody has sent two U.S. aircraft carriers, including our most recent and sophisticated, the Gerald Ford, off the coast of Israel. Seems to me, Jack, those are tempting targets. And if Israel wants to draw the U.N. permanently, they simply arrange for one or both of them to be sunk. That'll take down 5,000 sailors and Marines apiece. Blame it on Iran. And then the U.N. is in for an all-out war. And remember, Israel has consistently insisted Hamas and Hezbollah are Iranian-backed entities. Their real target is Iran. So they would like nothing better than to induce the United States to strike a war blow against Iran, where the outcome might not be so appealing. Get this, we got Scott Ritter talking about it. That war with Iran would be suicide, and the U.S. will lose. Here he is on with Clayton Morris. Let's listen to a little of what he has to say.
Well, we are on World War III watch. It's like a crock pot of war rhetoric right now, all thrown into one big pot. Just a few minutes ago, Chinese President Xi Jinping threw his support behind Russian President Vladimir Putin and the security of the Russian state, military security for Russia. A congressional report out this morning warning that a war with Russia and China is on the horizon and the U.S. should be prepared. Of course, we covered last night U.S. Foreign Affairs Committee, Committee Chairman Mike McCaul, authorizing President Biden to use force in a war against Iran. The Biden regime has also discussed using military force if Lebanon-based Hezbollah attacks Israel with rockets. All of these things unfolding in a World War III watch right now. We figured we'd bring in former U.N. weapons inspector, former U.S. Marine Scott Ritter, whose analysis on geopolitics and everything going on with these strategic war rhetoric right now is so important. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I guess maybe we start with just a few minutes ago, Xi Jinping throwing security support behind Russia. And what does this mean with this new congressional report warning that Russia and China, a war with both of those countries simultaneously, is on the horizon?
Well, first of all, let's talk about what Xi Jinping has done. China and Russia, of course, have a relationship that's that's superior to any treaty relationship. It's a relationship without any boundaries. This is what they've been saying. But there's been some boundaries. I mean, China has been a little bit reticent about Russia's military incursion into Ukraine. It violates China's Westphalian principles of sovereignty and things of that nature. But I think China has been compelled to reassess its posture, not by Russia's actions, but by the collective West's actions, that China now recognizes that this struggle between Russia and Ukraine isn't about Russia against Ukraine. It's about Russia against the collective West, against NATO, against the United States. And then China has to evaluate the rhetoric and the actions that have been coming out of the United States, its European allies, its Asian allies, in regard to China, the strangulation of China that they're trying to do economically and geopolitically. And China, I think, has realized that the best way to protect China is to align China militarily, secure from a security standpoint, with the other nation that is lined up against the same enemy set that China's facing, and that's Russia. And this is a huge deal because it's not that China's military is going to be coming over the borders. I mean, I think you'll see some Chinese assistance from a material standpoint. You'll see some of this. You'll see closer cooperation between Russia and China, but it won't be a one-way street. Russia has some technology it can offer China that will be devastating to America if China ever incorporates it. But more importantly, it's about the fact that Russia is no longer alone, that China now has said, we support what you're doing. We're on your side. We're on Team Putin when it comes to Ukraine, when it comes to the world, the global position. This is bad news for those in the United States who are trying to resurrect Cold War fantasies of being able to wage and win two wars simultaneously. You know, back when I was in the Marine Corps, we actually had a posture of fighting two and a half wars. The way the United States was configured militarily, we could fight a war in Europe using NATO and defeat the Soviet Union. At the same time, we could fight a major war in the Pacific, probably North Korea, and defeat the North Korean Chinese threat, and still have sufficient force to engage in a smaller war, say in the Middle East, where we would fight a holding action until we won one of the two major wars and diverted the resources in to win the half war. And we had the forces to do that. We trained to do it. We were ready to do it. And thank God we never had to do it, but I think we could have done it. Today, we went from two and a half to two wars. Today, we're down to literally one war, and we can't even do one war. Let's be honest. If we went to war right now in Europe against Russia, we don't have sufficient military force to prevail. We can fight a war. We can't win a war. If we went to war against China, we could fight a war, but we can't win it. And that's even if we bring the totality of our conventional strength into play. And now we're talking about doing it against both Russia and China. The costs that are going to be associated with this are phenomenal. First of all, it's going to require a massive expansion of our conventional military power. The United States Army just had a shortfall in recruiting. They are literally tens of thousands of personnel short of what their authorized manning strength is, which means instead of expanding the U.S. Army, they have to shrink it. They don't have enough men or women to fill the ranks. And so certain units, certain capabilities are being taken down to zero because you don't have manpower to do this. And now Congress is talking about even with what? Are you going to go to a draft? Have you run that by the American people? Is it really smart for the United States to talk about fighting a two-war? Do we know what that means? It means that America has to leave our continental fortress, go across the oceans to fight a war over there in their backyard. In their backyard. That means we're taking Russia on, in a confrontation in Europe where Russia's logistics are literally right there next to them. They're supplying themselves from interior lines of communication. We will have to extend ourselves. We don't have sufficient logistical buildup in Europe anymore. It would cost billions to do that. That means we have to sustain from the United States with lengthy supply lines. It's literally suicidal. So this is insane. Biden's talking about, they're talking about potential conflict with Iran. We can't fight Iran. We don't have the forces to do that. You know, we fought the Gulf War in 1991 by having friendly ports and airfields that we could bring our ships into and offload in an uncontested fashion and land and offload troops. How are we going to do that in a war with Iran? They're going to blow up every port, blow up every airfield. It means now we have to do a forcible entry into an Iranian port, Chabahar, Bandar Abbas. We don't have the force structure to do that. Iran has missiles that will sink our ships before we get there. They're parking two aircraft carrier battle groups off the coast of Lebanon with a 2,000-man amphibious ready group to fight Hezbollah. Hezbollah is 100,000 men, highly trained, dug in to the hills of southern Lebanon, who have been preparing for this fight. We have gone insane. Let me just make it very clear. America can't fight and win a war anywhere in the world right now against any power that has any military capability. We're that weak. We are literally that weak.
I think that was completely brilliant, Jack. I think Scott Ritter is one of the true expert and true tellers out there. I admire the guy beyond words. I think he gave us an overview that shows we are basically done as a military power in the world. We are done. We have shot our wad. We have no more munition. We can't even supply Ukraine. Ukraine's already been defeated. Talking about two wars or going to war with Iran, it's a fantasy. It's lunacy. Suicide, in his word. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. And another thing is the only thing we have to give to a war now, because our technology has been effectively stolen over the years, and Israel is a primary complicit in that operation, is a bag of vastly declining paper dollars. And the U.S. sent $70 billion, whatever the total number is, to Ukraine so far. The money has done nothing, and the money is even more devalued now than it was at that time. In order to fight a war outside of the U.S., we would be depending on the fact that we could buy things with dollars. But we know that both Russia and China and the Middle East has made arrangements outside of the U.S. to buy both oil and other products. The BRICS nations, for example, to do so in gold and silver and not take dollars. At the moment, the very moment when a war would be started between the United States and one of the bigger players, that would become obvious immediately that dollars would not be taken for certain critical items, including oil. We also see the price of oil rising right now, and you can expect that we'll see barrels of oil over $100, $120 in the very near future, because a war in the Middle East further destabilizes the oil supply. Not to mention the fact that Iran has been trying to encourage Saudi Arabia to cut off Israel's supply of oil. So in that sense, then we'll become Israel's oil supplier as well. Now, the United States has plenty of oil, but we don't have the facilities to get it out of the ground and use it. So it's a no-win scenario. The United States is being driven into the ground. Our only hope would be what I wrote about in 2013, which is to basically the article Bitcoin Breaks the Bank. We need to shut down our outside operations altogether, bring home our troops, put them in the position of rebuilding our factories, have a five-year goal to replace everything that we get from China and outside the United States from our own factories again, begin building our own currency to something that has value, using honest currency, and standing on our own as an island in the fashion that the Founding Fathers had, staying out of world politics and not be driven by little countries like Israel, who only serve their own interests at the expense of American lives and American blood. Now, I saw Biden said, I think this morning, let's not let Israel
stop people coming across.
Biden warns Israel not to repeat mistakes the U.S. did with their response to 9/11. So we're talking about, you know, the full genocide of a nation. That being supportive of another nation's genocide is not going to bring us any currency in our souls and in our spiritual life. I mean, the United States is not behind the good guy. And when you're not behind the good guy, you're not a good guy. And if you're not a good guy, you're demoralized. In the long run, you understand this. And so America could become a good guy again and disassociate itself with this evil world and rebuild its own civilization and its own currency and restore our own food supplies, eliminate the negative elements in our government and weed out the bad apples, and then start again with our constitutional foundation and our rule of law and the idea of property and so forth that was so unique to the experience of the United States of America.
Jack, those are wise words from a rational observer of the scene who has considerable knowledge of the intricacies and the interconnection between economics and politics. No one in Washington is going to pay attention to a single word you or I have to say. Not one of them. They're immersed in a ideological fantasy. They seem to believe all people are equal. Even men and women are interchangeable parts. That the destruction of education by subjecting children to basically pornographic literature, instruction in anal and oral sex when they're in the third grade is a good thing. That lawlessness and encouraging shoplifting up to $1,000 with impunity is taking place in all the Democrat cities are going to hell. The wealthy retailers are moving out. So are the wealthy residents. That means the tax base is shrinking. That means the local governments have less money to deal with bigger problems. America is collapsing around us, Jack. And I dare say the Democrats have brought this about in less than 3 years of the Biden administration. America has been turned into a cesspool of humanity. Not only have these other nations emptied their prisons and their insane asylum to send them to America, Israel wants to send all the Palestinians here too. And while I think the Palestinians are overwhelmingly more deserving than the others, at some point we have to say enough is enough. We have to take care of business at home, but it's not going to happen without the White House, Obama, Soros, and Bibi running the show, Jack. We are in a dismal situation, and I see no way out. Your thoughts before we hit the break and take calls, yours. Take your thoughts right after this break. We'll be back.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Jack, we heard Scott Ritter explain going to war with Iran would be suicide. It looks to me like we're virtually already there. Get this story. U.S. destroyer intercept missiles in an alarming sign of global military escalation showing America must stand by its allies. A U.S. warship saved Israel from a massive rocket strike by shooting down cruise missiles fired by Iranian proxies in Yemen. A U.S. naval destroyer in the Red Sea shot down three missiles fired by Houthi rebels from Yemen, according to the Pentagon, cited by The Independent. While the Pentagon isn't sure of the missile's target, they mentioned the rockets might have been heading toward Israel. In addition to the missiles, the U.S. forces also took down several drones. The leader of the Houthi group, Abdelmaka al-Houthi, warned the U.S. last week about getting involved in the Israel-Hamas conflict, saying they would respond with drones and missiles. Here's a tweet from CBS Evening News. U.S. officials say a Navy warship in the Red Sea intercepted and shot down several missiles and drones that were fired in the direction of Israel by Iran-backed rebels in Yemen. Jack, I think that's the story. That's the play. Iran is the boogeyman now, and the U.S. is on the verge of committing suicide. I think Scott's got it right. Your thoughts?
Out of my mind, it's long been believed, and this goes back to the time of the Balfour documents and that got rid of the Ottoman Empire in World War I era, that the Saudis were, in fact, a crypto-Jewish stronghold, and that family members had been usurped from the Saud family and replaced with these crypto individuals. This is not my thinking. This is historical record. We would know that they would be that way if we would see them in concert with Israel on many events, and we have over the past 10 or 15 years. And so this idea that these ships, which I had heard about earlier, were attacked by Houthis who are classified as part of or influenced or under the control of Saudi Arabia would just be further fuel for this fire. It's the USS Liberty all over again. Let's get the United States into this war. Let's start it with a good old fashioned rocket firing event. If that doesn't work, let's sink something. These are the problems with being entangled in foreign conflicts. Our founding fathers knew all too well. You can't control any of these events, and you can only believe what you believe in your heart, know for a fact from historical evidence, but you cannot show, for example, that the Jewish powers had anything to do with those rockets being fired. But I would bet my bottom dollar that that was the case. So, yes, that is exactly what's happening. And we can see that the United States is now also working towards total bankruptcy. I saw the news story a few minutes ago that Biden asked Congress for $106 billion more for Ukraine and claims he'll have support for he'll have aid, which means money, in 24 to 48 hours for Israel. So the United States' wealth is being bleeded away, just like Netanyahu said it would be. Americans seem to be either dumbfied by this or in fear or shock, or they're in groups cheering it on. And I would imagine the groups of people, 40 million of them or more, that are calling themselves Christian Zionists are being led at the pulpit to support anything the United States can do for Israel, not knowing that while they're doing that, they're entirely bankrupting their own country. So all of these things are happening much sooner in this timeline of prophecy than I expected, Jim. Whether or not this slows down and lets Trump become president, as the script would call for, I don't know. But right now, I would have to agree with Ritter. The United States is finished as far as fighting wars. We have some limited technology that can still do some damage, but we do not have the manpower, nor do we have the will to fight. We're not going to send our sons. I'm not sending my son to fight bankers' wars. And I think that anybody with a beating heart and a half-working brain would feel the same way. I want to fight this war with mercenaries, which is what they've been doing so far, or young men who made the decision on their own to join the military for personal reasons. That's another story. But me, no, I don't see them getting Americans fired up to send their sons over there as part of a draft. Yeah.
Well, we have two of our regular callers standing by. The number 540-352-4452. If you'd like to join the conversation, 540-352-4452. We begin with Brian in Texas. Join the conversation, Brian.
Kansas City, Jim.
Kansas City. I apologize, Brian. You're right.
That's
right.
Yeah, it's God's country.
Bruce is in Texas. Brian is in Kansas. Thanks. Brian in Kansas.
One thing I wanted to point out, the Saudi royal family, there was a British agent, MI6, whatever it was, back in the 1850s, that his diary was published, and he pointed out that the House of Saud was actually a Jewish merchant from Basra, Iraq, that the British installed in Saudi Arabia, gave him the money and everything to overtake the country. So they're Jews right from the start. Okay. And just some quick things here to show you how things are. My daughter recently had a son, and I said, as a birthday present to me, what I want is that he does not get vaccinated. And she goes, oh, okay, Dad. Well, she took him in for some appointment, and when they discovered he wasn't vaccinated, they said, well, you have to get him vaccinated or he can't go to school. So she did, and now all of a sudden he's autistic. So I know black seed oil will pull him out of it because he's really young. And the other thing that's happened to me recently is I know a guy that in his 50s, probably real muscular, healthy, of course, got the shots. And he called me to say, well, I'm not going to be around long. I got turbo cancer. I've got brain cancer and lung cancer. And he's in the same business I'm in, and he wanted to know if I wanted to take it over my son's business. I said no. And so anyway, it's hitting close to home right now. Oh, and
Brian,
you did mention one more quick thing, that Rabbi Alon Avey or whatever you talked about earlier, he's a Shabbat Lubavitch rabbi, which is the death cult. And I listened to one of his speeches on the internet, and he said Adolf Hitler was one of the lifetimes of Jesus Christ. And that's the kind of thing I get when I meditate. So I was surprised that there was some truth there. But they want just 600,000 Jewish males in the world. They want to kill everybody else. And then, I guess, 600,000 Jewish women for these males. But that's how crazy they are. And Zelensky in Ukraine is a member of that sect, as was Prashigin, the Wagner Group guy in Russia. So anyway, I'll let you go.
Brian, I mean, thank you. Jack. Jared Kushner's group. Jack, your thoughts, yeah.
Jared Kushner is also a member of Chabad Lubavitch, and they definitely are not big fans of us Americans, white people in general. They had on their website, Chabad.org, for many, many years that the no-hide laws would be implemented in this country, and that the death penalty for those who violate any of the no-hide laws would be, there would be only one acceptable form of execution, and that would be head removal. And so decapitation was on that site, and was on that site for a number of years until they got so much publicity that they changed it or took it down. But yeah, Chabad Lubavitch is not a fan of our world. And anyway, I think that you're correct in your assessment that the things are heating up here. The vaccines are a menace to humanity. There's nothing being done in this country to stop them. There's no movement by any group of people other than a handful of brave people that are attempting to get in the way of this. The pharmacies are allowed to still advertise it for free. They still push it on high school and elementary and even kindergarten children. And the American public is, it blindly walks in like sheeple standing in line for the next execution. So you're right, seating up in this country. I don't know what we can do about it. As we've already said, we can only plan for ourselves and prepare and get ready for the message coming our way, Jim.
Great call, Brian. Paul in California, join the conversation. Paul.
Well, I was going to try to be funny and say Scott Ritter is a pussy and Jack Mullins a ray of sunshine, and he should be serving on the suicide prevention hotline. So I did that anyway, but I want to go to Brian's call because this is a very upsetting. You know, I'm sorry to hear about that, Brian. And I'm assuming you've had more conversations with your daughter than just to request a birthday present to not have him vaccinated, right? I'm assuming there was more information behind that request. Was there, Brian?
Brian, are you still there? You're welcome to reply to Paul, Brian. Go ahead, Paul. Evidently not.
Oh, okay. This is very disgusting, you know, and then to talk about his friend who, I think he said he was in the same business he was, and, you know, this guy got the shot as well. There's protocols out there too. There's many good sites. I know a couple, they're very thorough, and it requires a little bit of time and discipline. But there's testimonials on there of people completely recovering from, the damage that the vaccine does, provided they're not dead, right? Think about that. I mean, really, you know,
Paul, I'm here.
Oh, okay. All right. So you heard my question to you, or you heard my...
Yeah, I did. I called back. So anyway, yes, but she's not very smart. Okay. This girl, she's actually not my birth daughter. My ex-wife had a one-night stand after we were divorced, and then I kind of raised her. But genetically, that other half is... been a problem since day one, and you can't really talk to her. She's just been a nightmare person. So that was my way of trying to keep him from being vaccinated. But she's kind of aware, you know, she knows 9/11. She's young. She's like 21, 22, but you know, she will make some stupid choices sometimes. So yes, I've had talks.
Well, and I wish we were all immune from stupid choices, sad to say. In every life, are some of the above. Paul, what did you think about the geopolitical analysis, what's going on in Gaza, Israel, Russia, China, Iran, all the big picture stuff, Paul?
Well, I'll take that next briefly, but I wanted to stay on this topic because this is what affects us all. It really pisses me off. You know, I was going to say this to you. I think I already said this before in the air, Jim, but you, Jim Fetzer, you are the seventh example of somebody that I know, that I've known, where the wife or the girlfriend is vaccinated and the man, the husband, the boyfriend is not. This is not any accident. I mean, I've actually had female listeners, you know, contact me over all the times I've called into your show and then my guest hosting or co-hosting and other stuff on RBN and other places. I've had women contact me and say they agree with me on my views on women, that they should not be allowed. I mean, I've actually said flat out, forget about politics. They should not be allowed major decision making. They just do not have the brains that men have. And I've made this point, like I said, many times, that how could it be an accident that I know now seven couples, you're the seventh, Jim, where the wife or the girlfriend believes and gets the vaccine and the husband, no way, he's not going to do it, including one of these people. It's pretty much broken up the family. You know, he told his wife, who was pushing him to get his son, since he's got now, at the time his sons were like 19 and 17, now they're like, you know, 21 and 19, that kind of thing. I've met both the sons. And, you know, he told her, no way, this is not happening. You could just leave. You could move out, you know. She was actually trying to punish the family because she was so angry about this. Because she's in healthcare, don't you know? You know, she's just a fucking administrator for Kaiser, but she's in healthcare, right? And she was actually moving out and staying with her sister. And as the way, you know, how women can punish you when they get mad at you. So we have to get control of our society back. And that, in my opinion, that involves a ruthless, you know, patriarchy. Anyway, so the whole situation over there, you know, my take on it is this. If Russian intelligence and Chinese intelligence and all these other major powers, if they know the truth about the U.S. and the U.S. military, as Jack has laid it out, or Scott Ritter supposedly lays it out, then why don't they do anything, right? Why don't they go ahead and take care of Israel, right? Why doesn't Iran just go ahead and take care? Iran by itself could probably take care of Israel, but if they got together with Syria and Egypt, they could certainly do it. You know, they could, as my friend used to say, iron them out. You know, I love that term, iron them out. But they don't, because I think in many ways, the people that are running those countries go along with the agenda because they're controlled by the same people that control our country.
I think they believe in international law. They believe respect for nations. They're not just going to willy-nilly attack. I mean, Paul, give us a break, man. I don't think Iran is controlled by a secret Jewish cabal, nor Russia, nor China. Oh, no. I don't buy into that. No. Now, there are those who hold that.
I do.
But it is not my...
Paul is spot on. Brian,
Brian, hold on. I want to bring Jack back in. Jack, your thoughts.
I couldn't agree more with Paul. I think in the sense that women were not characteristically involved with politics and history for a long time. Now, maybe in some way back times, you know, we had matriarchal societies and the gods were women, et cetera. That was a different story. But in our current renditions of history, we find that women are more suitable for other types of thinking, which they're quite capable of thinking very well. But as far as reacting properly to long-term planning or understanding intuitively what's happening in a warlike situation, who the real bad guys are, trying to cut past the garbage that you see on TV with dead babies that didn't actually get killed, then a woman doesn't do well in that situation. And the same thing with the medical profession, they're just populated with these females that have empathy and they're caregivers. And so they want to give care and they're told by their male authority figures that they, you know, worship that the vaccine is safe and effective. So it's no doubt that that's what these people are trying to do, but it will ruin a family or a household,
right,
or corrupt a business, right, et cetera. And so I agree with you there, Paul. I mean,
And Jack, you know, mentioned the perfect segue or example about babies that didn't get killed. How about viruses that don't cause disease, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it was
Paul,
right there.
Paul,
I got another
caller. Paul, I got another caller before we spin off on a whole other issue.
Okay.
I don't want to do that.
Well, it wasn't a spin-off. It was to make a simple example.
Paul!
All right, take the caller.
Thank you. Area code 206, please join the conversation. Please give us your name and state, which I take as Washington. Go ahead, 206.
Nick, Washington.
Nick, thanks.
Yeah, thank you. So what we have to remember, and this was said before, Bilkin with, you know, August 15th, 1871, Albert Pike predicted this. This is a pre-Israel Gaza. This is a pre-planned event. They want both Israel and Gaza to be completely flattened. They don't want a winner. They want humanity dead. It's not an Israel war, a Gaza thing, a China thing, a Russian thing. They want us all dead. And I think the one thing that we can lean on and beat these guys with, and we're kicking their butt in the information highway right now. That is really obvious that we're getting ahead of this really quickly. Like, we're on this like fly on shit. We're all over it. But I think their downfall is this is all pre-planned. And if we need to focus on getting their pre-plans out there and getting people away like we have with tearing this war apart, I think we need to start focusing on also on what's their next move and how can we get ahead of it and stay ahead of these guys instead of just being behind these guys all the time.
Nick, if you could elaborate, what do you mean by saying pre-planned? Could you lay that out?
Well, just like 1871, this is a part of their plan. Like Albert Pike was saying, he wanted Israel and he wants to bring the world on this, have one big world war. And just like with the G20 meetings and all these big world meetings, they have flyers and papers, and you can listen to these guys lay out their plans, what their next moves are. And I think that's their big mistake. And if we can start countering that and laying out there to the people, here's what we can see coming next in the future to start to be ahead of it. Cause we're breaking down their lies as they're doing it. And that's helping a lot to, I think, that make this go farther out of escalation. I'm not saying that bad stuff's not happening, but I'm saying also that, you know, there's a lot of lies going on and they're trying to hardest to make this escalate even farther. I'm not saying we're through this or even close to in the beginning of this. But I think the one thing that can help us is just trying to find these plans that they got. And they're all on, you know.
But it's Brian.
His name.
Hang on a minute, Brian. Nick, you surely don't think the howdy-doody puppet administration in office now is going to do anything like this, right? They're totally accommodating. Jack, I want to get your response to Nick. Go ahead. Jack.
Wait a minute. Yeah, I got my mic off. Actually, you know, I'm not actually certain the points that Nick made there. I was focusing on.
Well, he's talking about 1876, Pike predicting Syria or Gaza or Israel. And, you know, as an agnostic, of course, I have a very skeptical view about prophecy. So many are just vague enough they can accommodate almost any situation developed. Go ahead, Jack.
They were and prophecies were created to pretend religion. So as the religions are pretend, your gut feeling that this is all a bunch of stuff, nonsense, etc., is correct. Now, you know, being spiritual was not being part of one of the earthly religions created by men, the evil religions that we know as the Abrahamic religions. But Albert Pike seemed to have gotten that plan in 1850, and then it was written, you know, in words that almost seem like it came out of early part of the 1900s. And so I have believed for some time that this is definitely a plan. In the 1850s, they were already talking about Germany had to die. And had made the decision that the Russian aristocracy would go away and that the whites in the Soviet Union, in that time Russia, would be exterminated. And then the next one on the list would be the United States. And so it has been a definite plan of de-whitening the world for 150 or 200 years or more. So I agree with him on that. I don't know that I would say that I don't believe, for example, that all the houses in this, all the nations in this world aren't following actively the Jew World Order plan, because they appear to be doing so exactly. Or they wouldn't be having the Chinese walk around with masks and inoculating all their populations, and they wouldn't be serving the interests of the Jew World Order in that sense. So I agree with Nick.
Brian, a very concise comment because we're to the end. Go ahead, Brian, very concisely.
Well, if you look at the BRICS nations, their banks they still have Rothschild-controlled banks. So everybody's excited about BRICS, but the Russian bank, I looked it up, their head of their bank is a World Economic Forum person. And so when BRICS takes hold, nothing's going to change. They control everything. They control Russia. They control Iran. If they didn't control things, we'd have free energy and things would be a lot better. But they control every country.
Brian, that was a good, concise comment. Paul, can you equal that? Be concise. A final thought?
Yeah, well, I was just going to tell Jack earlier in the show, Jack, I've been working on Jim, trying to get him to stop this nonsense about dual Israeli citizens, blah, 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 because as we both know, you can't tell who's a citizen and who's not. It's a concept, right? It's Jews, okay? You can't have Jews in government. You can't have Jews in the country. It's period, end of story. And he's coming along, Jack. It's a slow but sure process. You know, it's an intellectual concept. And even though, I think he's reluctant, I think he sees the truth in what I say.
Dragging and scratching.
Nick, I'm glad you called in, Nick. If you could say something in 30 seconds, I want to give the last word to Jack. Nick, 30 seconds.
When we come at the end of this and we put these people all in prison and hang these people, I don't want to hang these people. People in hard-back military prisons, and I want to do chance of them, and I want to watch them breaking rocks all day.
Okay. Nick, thanks for calling in. And Paul and Brian, Jack, the floor is yours for your final thoughts.
Well, thank you. And I appreciated Paul's comment there, and Nick, and everybody else. Is on the right page, and we got a pretty good idea what's happening in this world. We have a little bit of time left to make our own arrangements, but I don't think, Paul, that I can help the people on the suicide helpline, because there's no reason for me to believe that I can change anything in the near future. So let's just go with it and try to be on the side of good. Think good thoughts.
Jack, great having you here. Everyone out there, spend as much time as you can with the people you love and care about. We do not know how much time we have left. Spend the weekend wisely. Take advantage of those opportunities you have. This concludes a sensational week of Joaquin Agobian Monday, John Kaminsky Wednesday, now Jack Mullen here Friday. We can't do much better than that. Have a great weekend. Thanks for being here.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their...